welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello and welcome to episode number 188 of the Self-Help Podcast. With me, Edward Lamb, my good pal Sean Orford.
Hello.
And a special mystery guest. A mystery no longer, we got Roman Carr. How are you doing, Roman?
Hello, I'm doing well. Thank you, Ed.
Thanks for joining us. I'll give you a full intro in just a sec. Before I dive into the show, liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Check it out for all the show notes and links for this and all previous episodes. There's quite a collection of them there to check out, and lots of interesting stuff that we're going to link to in this week's episode. Quick mention to our partners, 123 Friday. If you click the button, the image on our website of 123 Friday, you'll learn all about it. It's basically a backup app for your phone, for all your photos, videos and contacts. Should the worst happen and you drop it down the toilet, or, I don't know, it falls off a moving train, you never know what may happen. All the information.
How dramatic can you get?
I know, I'm trying to think of more dramatic ways of trying to be. It's really sell it. Check it out if you can. Great little app.
You can tell he's a good salesman, can't you?
Yeah, and every purchase of it helps this show just a little bit. Just helps us keeps us going, doesn't it, Sean?
It does.
Keeps us off
keeps
the street.
Keeps the wolf from the door.
How you been, Sean?
Very good.
Up to much?
I took some time off over the festive period.
I noticed.
So I'm back into working in the hospital today, which was quite chaotic going back in there. But the highlight of my last week was on Saturday. I did a bread course at the cookery school in Altrincham and made five different loaves of bread. It was amazing.
I saw your pickies really, on Instagram.
Really good.
Looked amazing.
Really good. Really enjoyed it.
Learned some new tricks.
Yeah, fabulous.
So you said you've been in hospital. I've seen a little bit of news over the last day or two about kind of war zone esque scenes in hospitals. I know you're not an A&E, right?
So. No, but it's tough. It's tough in the NHS at the moment.
Yeah, a lot of pressure.
Tough. Yeah.
People
not, easy. Right? Not easy for the staff. You know.
Sean's the rescue, though, eh?
Yeah, on a white horse. So.
I'm doing okay as well. I'm back up to speed with work. I tried to get back, well, 3rd of Jan I was working again, but it was quite quiet that initial week. Back to it properly today. My emails have been lighting up.
You've been working hard.
Working hard, yeah. Going to be a big year. I can feel it. I can also feel that blooming fire that you've got on next to us. We're almost sitting here in our underwear now.
This is the only topless podcast.
Before we kind of pass out through the heat in this room, Roman, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Ed. Yeah.
We're talking today about your experience with Islam, your faith, and kind of the power of good that it is can give to the world, or does give to the world.
My name's Roman Khan. I've been a Muslim all my life, as you can guess from the surname. I was brought up down in London, so I'm a southerner, and I moved up here for work reasons. I met Sean while working for FMC, and Sean did a quick introduction into meditation and had a quick chat with Sean. And it was a very interesting chat that we had. So just going to be moving on from there.
Okay.
Yeah, interesting for me, the connections that we were making between the ideas of prayer and meditation and how the things come together in lots of ways.
Yeah,
we'll come back to that as we go along here.
We will indeed. Yeah. I mean, we'll just dive into the show then. You've got lots of notes there. You're very well prepared, Roman. I'm very impressed.
In fact, you're the most prepared person that's ever come on the show.
Wow. Okay.
I've got to say, yeah, definitely. So, do you want to give us the brief history of your life and your journey with Islam up till now?
Sure, yeah. So, Sean asked me to discuss how I believe that how Islam brings me inner peace and promotes healthy living. So, I've done a brief plan for my presentation there, as you say.
Very good.
So, the introductory section says who I am, what my upbringing was, what my current job is, and then going to talk about Islam, what is Islam, and what my faith is founded on, and then talk a bit about the hierarchy of the message of Islam.
Yep.
And then the main body, and tend to just talk about the five pillars of Islam and how they promote healthy living and inner peace, if that's the kind of thing you want to hear.
That sounds quite ideal for our audience, I would say.
So dive on in.
I've got an initial question here, which is why Islam, but I guess you didn't have much say initially in terms of the direction of your life.
It's a good question, and I often ponder about that, that if I hadn't been born in an Islamic family, would I have found the faith kind of thing? Actually, the answer is probably no. I wouldn't have found the faith by myself, but so I count myself lucky like that. But and it seems strange because I feel strongly involved in the faith now, but I don't think I would have got there by myself. So, an interesting point.
That's what I'm here for. That probably won't be the last, I'm sure. What's your background in terms of your family history? Is it Pakistani?
Yeah, both my parents Pakistani, settled in the UK in the 60s. I was actually born in Scotland, but we moved down to Hayes, Middlesex, when I was about 4 years old, hence I don't have a strong Scottish accent. My early Islamic education was mainly through my mum. You know, she taught us how to read the Quran. She used to tell us stories about the prophets, and we phonetically learned how to read the Quran at an early age. She taught us how to pray and how to fast, although they were never enforced in our household, and I only came to do that later on. And I think that was about the average for most of the families we knew. Everyone knew how to pray and how to fast, but it was never enforced in the households.
Okay.
And we were fortunate in that my dad used to work for British Airways, and we used to travel to Pakistan every year and see the families there. And I'd say that was pretty much the norm as well for the families that we interacted with in Pakistan as well.
Mm. Okay. You know, when you say about your mum teaching you the Quran, was that in Arabic? Or did you learn in English letters, as it were?
No, it was in Arabic, but we only learned how to speak phonetically. We never understood the meanings.
All right, yeah.
And there was a time at home when I found a Quran translation by a chap called Marmaduke Pickthall, and he's done a very old Quran translation. And at a young age, I'd say in my teens, I started to read a couple of pages of that every day.
Right.
And I found that helped me understand the message, and it's a habit I kind of grew up with. I then went on to the Yusuf Ali translation of the Quran, and they're the two I recommend if anyone's going to read them.
Right.
But I never quite understood how we spent so much time focusing on the Arabic, and yet we believe that's the word of God, but we never spent time trying to understand that. And I think that's mainly the subcontinent culture that we were brought up in, that we learned the Arabic, but never really tried to understand the message.
Yeah, interesting.
Okay.
We need to make sure we put references on the notes to those versions of the Quran that you're recommending, so people want to use them.
We will. Yeah, I'll get the links and stick them in the show notes from you, Ryan, so everyone can check these if you can. I mean, I think you wanted to say that. Do you want to give us a quick story of Islam from your perspective, and with your little disclaimer at the end as well?
Yeah. I was just going to say just a bit about myself. Then, so I did chemical engineering at Swansea University. Works mainly in the nuclear industry, so now I combine chemical engineering with Six Sigma, and I think I've found my calling, which is Six Sigma, and I've written two books on Six Sigma as well. So one of them's called Six Sigma Statistics Using Minitab 17, which is available from Amazon.
Yeah,
so
we'll
thank you for letting me get that in there.
Yeah, that was really subtle.
So can you, in a sentence, just explain what Six Sigma is?
Six Sigma is a data-driven business improvement, or a process improvement methodology.
Right.
Yeah, so it relies very heavily on studying systems, getting the data, and then making data-based decisions to make improvements.
Right.
So it's all about cutting out myths and legends and working on the data to improve the process.
Right.
Wow, okay, cool. I mean, how do you find... This is getting a bit deep in straight away, maybe, but how do you find the scientific angle, and how do you balance that with your faith?
If I can I just come on to that a bit later on when we talk
absolutely.
About faith?
Yeah. Remind me, though, because I've got it in my notes.
Part of the plan.
I
was going to say, in my early upbringing, we didn't used to fast and pray, and then eventually got to a time where I did start to fast and pray.
Was that just your parents wanting you to find your own way? Or?
Not really. It was more after I left home. So, once I got married, my dad died quite suddenly after I got married, so that's kind of something that changed my perspective. I think the influence of an older brother who was, finding his path a bit ahead of me, and an older cousin who came from Pakistan.
Yep.
And the Muslims I met whilst working at Springfields, which is the nuclear industry.
Yeah.
And I started praying the Friday prayer with those guys, and then eventually started reading the morning prayer, and then like that doing another one and another one, and same with fasting. My wife used to fast more than me, so I used to do the weekend ones, and eventually, you know, got around to making sure I was reading and conducting all the fast during Ramadan.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah. So now I try and pray 5 times a day, and I usually manage that. I read the Quran almost every day, and I fast during Ramadan and do extra ones as well, and give the required charity.
Which we'll come on to later on. So when you're doing the praying as well, is that the whole point? You've got to face the right direction and all that.
Yeah, that helps. Yeah.
Yeah, that's important. See, I know that bit.
Yeah. You can even, well, you can get some nice apps now that, you know, Qibla Finders, they're called, you know. So it tells you that, making sure you're praying in the right direction. But you actually have quite a wide angle that you can.
Okay, so you don't have to be within 1 or 2 degrees.
No, no.
Okay. So do you carry a mat? Do you use a
I do, mat? Yeah. I have a portable prayer mat that I keep in my rucksack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although that's not a necessity. You just got to find somewhere clean.
Yeah.
So at home, we don't have prayer mats. Just pray on the carpet.
Yeah.
And do you have a room for that? Or is it just wherever's closest?
Yeah, wherever's closest. So sometimes you don't fancy going upstairs to the bedroom, so you can just pray downstairs.
Yeah, okay.
Doesn't matter.
Yep.
Brilliant, yeah. Okay.
So I thought I'd talk about, you know, what Islam is to start off with.
Mm.
So Islam means submission, literally, so meaning submission to the will of God. And a Muslim is a person that surrenders himself to the will of God. So we believe in the Abrahamic prophets, but we believe in strict monotheism. So we believe in Jesus as a prophet of God, Noah, Moses, they're all prophets of God. And even I think John the Baptist is mentioned along the line of the prophets as well.
Mm-hmm.
So then you could say, okay, so what is the will of the God? So that was the message of the prophets, the message that they brought down. And Muhammad, peace be upon him, we believe is the last in the line of the messengers. And he delivered a very detailed message to mankind.
Yeah. Can we just pick up on that, peace be upon him? So can you explain that?
It's we believe that if you put blessings, or, you know, say blessings upon the prophet, peace be upon him, you will get those back tenfold, and it's a sign of respect as well.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So usually we say it in Arabic, but
So what would it be in Arabic?
Sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So. Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he delivered a message in 3 different forms. The first was the Quran, which we believed was the unchanged word of God. So initially Muhammad recited the Quran to his companions and they memorized it, and it was written shortly after he died. So it was put in the written form then. And recently they found a Quran, they carbon dated it, and it's 1400 years old. So the Arabic in that Quran is still the virtually the Arabic that we read today. It's made easier by showing the vowels, which an Arab wouldn't need, but it's still the same Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the English translations of the Quran can be quite different between the different copies, hence there's still that emphasis on learning Arabic.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that's the part of the message.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
That's it, exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you need a lot of knowledge and context to understand the Quran, i.e. what was the history of Islam as the message was being revealed over 23 years. Because at some points the Quran addresses the prophet, sometimes it addresses the companions, sometimes it addresses his tribe called the Quraysh, and sometimes it addresses all of mankind. So sometimes the verses have a historical context as well. So at times it could be advocating war to the prophet to fight against Quraysh, who were trying to destroy early Islam. And sometimes it advocates peace. But this is depends on what God was telling the prophet at that time.
Right.
Okay. So again, some of those verses can be misquoted and misused quite easily, you know, for, you know, what we see recently as well, you know, around the world.
Yeah. Interesting.
And that was something that we were talking about before we went on air, that idea about when these things happen, as we have an upsurge at the moment with ISIS and stuff like that, how that feels from your point of view, being a Muslim. What's it like to hear that kind of news?
It's heartbreaking, really, and it's wrong in a way for myself, because I was saying what we tend to do now is first we think about okay, who did the bombing? I'm kind of thinking, oh, I hope it wasn't Muslims again, whereas I should be thinking about the victims and all the people who have died. But you end up thinking, oh my God, you know, not. I hope it's not Muslims again, or fanatics again, I should say.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's quite an important statement, isn't it? The idea between Islam as a pure religion, philosophy, belief, as opposed to fanaticism. Mm. And maybe that's when we talk about words being taken from the writings and then being kind of perverted so that people can use it to justify what they want to do.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Again, a lot of people just want power. They don't care what form they get it in, do they? And they will use any kind of message that they can.
There's a white dude about to take office in America.
In America, yes.
11 days from now, I think.
So, yes.
He said a few things to climb the ladder.
Hasn't seemed
to do much damage. Yeah, yeah. We'll see. I'll see how long he's going to last before he gets impeached or something crazy like that.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. Every time he sends out a text, he's costing business billions of dollars. Isn't he? Depending on who he targets.
Yeah.
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 What a time to be alive, eh?
Yes, it's an odd time to be alive. There's a lot of movement, isn't there, in philosophy around the world.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so carrying on. So that was the Quran. So then we have the Sunnah. So the Sunnah was the verbal message of the Prophet, which he passed out to a multitude of people. So that's instructions on, let's say, how we pray, rituals for marriage and death, and how to be a part of the religion. And then finally you get the hadith, which are people's interpretations of the sayings of the Prophet. And so they were recorded from trusted sources. So the Prophet might have said something to, let's say, Sean, and then later on Sean told his dad, who told his dad, and then it was recorded as the Prophet said this. Mm-hmm. That's how you should conduct it. So it's always worth knowing. And if a person's quoting from Islam, they should say, okay, this is part of the Quran, or this is a hadith, so so you know what the source is, and you know how strong the message is, because the Quran is the unchanged word of God, whereas the hadith is an interpretation of what someone then later on recorded as what the Prophet said.
Cool. Okay.
So this is my disclaimer now. So I'm a practicing Muslim, but I'm not what they call learned. I think in Islam, I'm not a sheikh. And I apologise if I make any mistakes, but I'm trying to address the topic of how I believe that my Islam brings me inner peace and promotes healthy living.
Do you have a sheikh or someone you go to for advice, or who's the go-to?
Mr. Google, I think you call him. Yeah, Sheikh Google.
Sheikh Google. He's your go-to for wisdom.
Yeah. I've got two very good books at home, actually, that someone who ran a website has people sending in questions, and he's answered the questions. And I find that's my right level of Islam. And the book is simply called Understanding Islam by a chap called Mose Ahmed. So that's where I learned a lot of my Islam.
Right.
Yeah. Apart from my mom.
A mosque as well? Or?
For Friday prayers I do, yeah. Okay. And then during Ramzan we get together there as well.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
So we're going to go through the... There are five pillars, I believe, but we're going to go through four of the pillars that are relevant to you or that you've worked your way through so far. Is that right?
So I think these four, at the moment, have more bearing on the topic. So I'd like to go through those, if that's okay.
Starting
with faith.
Yeah, because beforehand, and they're all relevant to everyone listening, really, in terms of the things that we teach as live in the present.
Okay, so the first one, I thought, is faith, and although not related to mental and physical well-being, I thought it worth explaining some things, because you might be thinking, okay, where does his faith come from? Because I'm an engineer, I've done a lot of science, I'm a Six Sigma Master Black Belt, and I've said before that Six Sigma is a data-driven process, so people might be thinking, okay, so how can he have faith in a God that he's never seen, and where's the data-driven process now? So my faith comes from two sides, I think. Firstly, from the feeling that I get from when I pray, when I fast, when I give charity, when I read the Quran. And I know these feelings are intangible, especially to the listeners. And I thought about it, and unfortunately there isn't a single fact I can give you that would prove the existence of God, and you'd go, oh, yes, I see that now.
Yep.
But I think, you know, there's small pieces of data there, and you have to ask yourself, okay, so if I can have a number of small pieces of verifiable data, how many of these would it take to maybe change my opinion? But I didn't ask you, actually. You know, do you believe in God?
Big question. Yeah. You go first, John, because you...
Yeah, yeah. Well, I spent many years as a monk, you see.
Yeah.
So, in an Ayurvedic tradition, which is pre-Buddhist tradition. So, for me, the idea of atheism is kind of daft to me. I don't get that. And to me, that kind of unknowable bit of spirituality is like electricity. I can't see it, but if I touch it, it gives me a real belt. And for me, it's like that with spirituality. You can't necessarily see it. You can't see God, but you can see the effect of it. Mm-hmm. So that's the way it works for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm similar to that. I guess I attend church with my wife most weeks. My father-in-law is a minister, URC minister, which is kind of really why I go to church, just because initially it was, well, my wife dragged me along.
Okay.
But I did go when I was a child quite a lot as part of the Cubs and Scouts and all that
right. Kind
of thing as well. I just like going to church because it's a good group of people and I kind of learn stuff each week. It's kind of like, I don't know, like going to school, really. But again, yeah, I went through the teenage phase of kind of finding atheism quite appealing in terms of, you know, where's God? You know, you can't see him, he's never done anything, he or she. But I quite see that's quite an immature view now, and there's no point fighting against something that you can't prove, which atheism is. I can't prove the existence of God, but like you say, you kind of get these little feelings every now and again that something could be out there or could be responsible for all this. So
all you have to do is look at creation and ask the question, why? Science answers how.
Yeah.
You know, we have to turn to faith to understand why. It's a different angle and a different point.
I would say it's slightly different. I'd say science makes a guess at how.
Yeah. Do you think it gradually learns? Does it gradually?
Yeah, it evolves because I remember when I was growing up, we didn't. This could be a whole topic in itself, couldn't it? I remember when I was growing up, when they talked about evolution, they never talked about dinosaurs having feathers. But now to explain birds evolving from reptiles, they then say. So the story kind of changes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it could be a whole topic in itself.
Yeah,
won't divert us.
Yeah.
Okay. You'll have to come back and do it.
Well, what I do is go back to Six Sigma and just say, you know, what we do in hypothesis testing, we start off with the null hypothesis. So in this case, we would say we are a creation of randomness as our null hypothesis. And then we would say, okay, so what's our own personal limits of, okay, if I have this many pieces of data, when would I start to say, okay, you know, what you're saying... You could be right, there could be a God, or you know, that message could be right. So we all have a different significance level of the number of pieces of data that we need. So what I've done is put together some of the things that I think are pieces of data, and I just wanted to share those with you and your listeners.
Yeah, of course, go for it.
Yeah, so there are many, but here's the ones that I like. First of all, starting off with the golden ratio. So I think National Geographic are doing a math series of books, aren't they? They're talking about the golden ratio.
Okay.
So it's 1.618 and it carries on forever with the Greek symbol phi.
Yeah.
It turns up in the Fibonacci series, in nature, fractals, shell design, leaf design, Greek architecture, feng shui, and we even think people are beautiful whose features are formed around the golden ratio.
Yeah.
I can't remember what they are, the thickness of your lips divided by the...
Yeah, it's the width of your eyes as well.
There's quite a few, isn't there? Yeah. Now, Abraham laid the foundation of the Kaaba in Mecca, so the point that Muslims pray towards. And that was done many thousands of years before Islam.
When you say laid, you mean laid out the foundation of?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the actual location of the Kaaba is at the golden ratio between the North Pole and the South Pole. So if you take the two distances from the North Pole to the Kaaba and divide that by... similar distance to the South Pole, or the reciprocal of that, you'd end up with 1.618. Not the exact multi-digit number that we talk about, but the same golden ratio used in nature.
Cool. All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay. And then we'll talk about the Quran, which was unchanged for 1,400 years. And the Quran, in certain verses, tells man how mountains stabilise the crust of the earth, how the structure of mountains are as pegs, so they're not just on the mantle, they actually go into the mantle, the structure of mountains. the Quran describes what's called a haloclime, which is the stratification of salt water and fresh water, and describes the density layer between the two.
Wow.
Okay, the Quran describes human embryonic growth, talks about the healing properties of honey, and one of my favourite ones, which I only found out a couple of years ago, the Quran says, we sent down iron to you. Now, scientists are now saying that, that our sun isn't hot enough to form iron, and so the iron on the in the Earth's crust and on the Earth wasn't produced in the solar system.
So it's come from a meteor or...
Well, it's come from somewhere,
somewhere
else.
Yeah.
But not on the Earth. Mm-hmm. So these are the kind of pieces of data that I take and form my faith, the data part of it anyway.
Mm. Okay, brilliant. Yeah. Love it. Okay. Cool. What are we up to?
Okay, so next one we're going to talk about is prayer. And I've been praying 5 times a day, let's say from my mid-20s. I'm just going to give you a bit of a story about my journey through prayer and how Sean helped me as well with meditation.
Do you have an app to remind you? Because I've been to like Turkey where you get the call to prayer each time in the day.
Okay, yeah.
How do you know? Do you just kind of...
I don't even have a watch, yeah, so... I just watch the time and I kind of like refer to a website and have a look there. It doesn't change much, so you're okay. So you know the sunset prayer, you know, when the sun sets at 4:15 and the other one's about an hour after that. The nighttime one is a midday one and a mid-afternoon one, so it's not too bad.
Is the 5 relevant? 5 times a day?
There's no girl ratio going on there.
No. There are... stories that the Prophet Muhammad, when he went to heaven, he negotiated it down from a lot more down to 5.
Yeah.
So that's where the 5 comes from.
Come on. Yeah. Yeah, really?
Yeah. Good question. Don't put me on the spot.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so the recommendation for prayer has always been slow, rhythmic reading. And as I said before, my routine was usually to do it as quickly as possible, and I must admit, while I was doing them, I was thinking about, you know, what I'm going to be doing next, what I was doing before, reviewing my day, still running through the recitations in Arabic for the prayer, but just doing it quickly. And I even said as well, sometimes I used to race my wife to make sure that I ended up in bed first and didn't have to do all the chores that the last person into bed has to do.
Did you lock the front door? Yeah.
Yeah. Just go and check the kids are okay or something like that.
Yeah.
But not if I get into bed first, then I don't have to. But I always found I was a very, you know, restless sleeper. I used to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning. My brain just wouldn't switch off. And even then, while I was in prayer, if you said to me, just try and concentrate and don't think of anything for 10 seconds, my brain would be jumping about and change the subject quicker than a dictionary. And I knew I just wasn't living in the moment. And then when I went to work at FMC, I met up with Sean, and we were at Chester Zoo, and Sean did a brief introduction into meditation, and he did some guided meditation. I don't know if you can remember that, just for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And I found it so restful, I fell asleep. Yeah. And then he said, "Okay, wake up now." And I realised, I hope no one's noticed that I fell asleep then. That's it.
I always do that when Sean's talking.
I have that effect.
Okay, so that's the link with meditation. Was that like an... Had you heard of meditation before then, or thought that maybe it might be something
you'd use? I'd heard of it, and I'd tried it, but it wasn't until kind of Sean explained it, and we had a couple of other chats in the canteen after that, and then you put me onto Headspace, onto that website.
Yeah.
And I tried a couple of the free first 10-day guided meditations, and I found those so restful. And I think it did help my sleep pattern. And then usually what I do when I find something that's helpful, and my discipline lets me down, and I stop doing it. So I was really thinking, how can I embed this in my behaviour? And I thought, well, you know, let's bring it back to prayer. Let's link it into prayer. Think about the slow rhythmic meditation, and then use the technique that's given in the Headspace guided meditation, which says every time your thoughts drift off, just gently bring them back in.
Yeah.
And thinking of that as a busy road, I think he says on Headspace.
Yeah.
And so I tried to put the two together, and I found it really did help. So in Islam, we're actually taught, okay, one first thing is, you know, do the slow rhythmic reading when you recite the Quran, when you do your salat, But I wasn't doing that. And so this kind of focused me back on doing it the right way. And I find it is kind of a disconnect. And I believe now that that prayer is actually for us to meditate five times a day and disconnect from the world. Yeah. And I find that now that I think I'm doing it better, I'm not still not got it right, I don't think, but I'm doing it better. I think I'll find that.
But you're living in the moment with the prayer rather than going through the just doing it parrot fashion. You're actually there with it.
Yes, I'm trying to be, yeah. It's still hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And I find it helps me throughout the day as well. I think it's, you know, it's given me better rest in terms of sleeping, yeah.
Yeah.
How does the prayer slot in with your day and like the everyday crazy rigmarole of work and family? And do you, like, so for example, if you're driving somewhere on a long distance journey, maybe to Scotland or I don't know, do you stop somewhere especially to pray, or is it something is it a motorway service station job, or
there's provisions for when you're praying when you're travelling that you can delay them and things like that. But as far as my routine goes, prayers don't take long. They take, you know, 4 or 5 minutes at the most. Well, now that I'm going a bit slower, they do. Before that, it used to be a bit quicker.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
There's another part to prayer as well, which I think helps, and that's what we call the dua. So the salat is the strict, proceduralised prayer. Then the dua, what we do at the end of prayer, is more of the free form, saying thank you for all the blessings that you've been given. So I think that helps a lot. So this is where we would say something like, you know, thank you for the food I've eaten today, the shelter given to me. You know, thank you for the security we live in our good health. So remembering those less fortunate than ourselves and, you know, being thankful for not having those third world problems as well. So that's in the dua.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, we're talking about that before as well, that's what life hack people say. You know, as you start your day, think of some positive things and remember the positive that you've been given.
Yeah. I can remember it as a kid because my mother was an Irish Roman Catholic background. But you'd get grace before a meal where the family would say, for what we're about to eat, may the Lord make us, you know, duly thankful. Mm. But it would come out as, well, he says, may you be thankful, and then you start the food, don't you? So rather than actually, because for me, mindfully, consciously looking at the food, being aware of how it got on the plate, the fact that there was a plate there or a table to put it on, and having that gratitude is so fundamental. Rather than food being fuel, it's something that is a gift that's there.
I think you're right. In our busy lifestyles, we forget, don't we, that we think the food is going to be in the store all the time, and it may not be, and we should be grateful for it.
Yeah. It's very easy in our society where we have so much to forget that.
Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, Sunday lunch at the in-laws for me is, it's always... there's grace said before the meal, and it's good to, my father-in-law obviously knows what he's talking about and what he's doing, and it's quite deliberate. Different pair every time, or different. Yeah. Maybe he'll say something different every time. It's not just going through the motions. It's brilliant, really.
Yeah,
just kind of sets.
But it's that focus, isn't it? And that allows us to be in the moment.
Yeah.
With the food, rather than. Yeah.
Yeah, although with two toddlers sitting there with the food around, you know, and he's kind of watching. I can see Will make watching to see if everyone's got their eyes shut when they're praying, and he's like, you didn't have your eyes shut, Daddy. I was watching you.
So that brings us nicely on to charity, which is the next pillar I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
So there's a hadith that says, he is not a believer whose stomach is filled while his neighbour to his side goes hungry. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the big things in Islam, is whether you're chasing the bounties of the world, we call it, or whether you're chasing the hereafter. And I think a lot of people say if you chase the world, then you can never have enough, can you? And you'll never be happy. Mm-hmm. And nowadays we constantly hear, don't we, that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. So, you know, the top 1% now own 50% of the world's wealth, don't they? Mm-hmm.
Apparently, well, I saw a stat a couple of days ago, the richest 62 people in the world own as much as the bottom half, like 3.5 billion. So 62 people. It's just insane, isn't it? Mm. I mean, you can believe it completely. But,
The thing that I'm continually astounded by with us human beings is that if we all just simply looked after each other, we'd all be okay. Mm. But the idea that these 62 people that are holding all these resources, why? You know, when you live in a house, you can only use one bedroom, one bathroom, one... You know, we don't need to own the world. And sharing is such a powerful thing. It would solve the world's problems just like that.
Can I have one of those chockies?
And we, you can have some. It is, no, it is Christmas.
Never mind. <They're mine. laughs> Not yeah. The cream egg ones.
Sean owns 50% of all the chockies.
Of the chocolates, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But there is some hope, isn't there? I think I've heard about the Bill Gates Foundation, where Bill Gates and Warren Buffett donated massive amounts of money, and now even Mark Zuckerberg's saying that he's going to eradicate a lot of the world's diseases. So.
Well, yeah, if we get rid of AIDS, it would be Bill Gates, wouldn't it? The amount of money he's put into it is huge.
Yeah, there's quite a team of some really cool people, actually.
Yeah,
doing some good work.
But I think that I was reading somewhere, I don't know the reality of it, that Bill Gates said that he wasn't going to leave all his money to his kids, that his kids had to learn to create for themselves, and he was going to give it to charitable causes. And
I think Peter Jones says the same thing as well, doesn't
he? Right.
Yeah, he has done. Yeah, no, definitely Bill Gates has. Seems pretty obvious why. I mean, I don't want to keep picking on the guy, but you look at Trump and his kiddies, kind of, and the lifestyle they've probably grown up with, and everything handed to them seems to be, well, materialistically they're doing okay, but you worry about, well, not worry, but spiritually, where they're at and kind of what they're,
kind
of what's in store for us all in the next few years.
Yeah.
Time will tell, hey? Yeah. But yeah, in terms of charity, then, don't want to get you off your notes there, but yeah, it's quite specific in terms of the amount you need to give.
So in Islam there's two kinds of charity. Like you say, there's the compulsory part, which is called zakat. So you have to give 2.5% of your the amount of money that you've saved over a year, so, or not used over a year, if it's above a certain threshold. So the poor don't have to give that charity, but every man and woman do have to give 2.5% of their annual wealth, let's call it. And it's not just money as well, so it could be like gold and silver as well, and jewellery, that kind of wealth. And so all the Muslims that I know give that amount of money. I won't talk about it because there's a... The Muslims are now in the UK actually the most charitable group, and in terms of financial giving, they talk about there is other kinds of charity, like you know, charitable work and things, but in terms of finances.
But I think that that is an important message, as we are here, we're examining Islam, and people that are listening to this, some people may have some quite bigoted ideas about Muslim Islamic beliefs, and the fact that the inherent in the Islamic belief is this essence of charity, to me, is a really powerful and important message for people to hear.
Great.
Yeah, and it isn't that negative ISIS image that we have on television.
It's I think the media's to blame for this, this negative image. They really show anything positive about Islam. And I noticed the other day they were talking about divisions in British society on the news, and they show a woman in a burqa just as they're talking about that. So you get this Pavlovian response, you know, building up inside you. And there was that program on recently where they put a group of Muslims into a house together. I don't know if
I saw it, because it must have been you that mentioned it to me, and I went and hunted it out and had a look at it.
I heard about it. I didn't catch it.
Yeah.
So the only time they showed them the Muslims praying, the editor decided to break into that program and talk about the Nice truck driver whilst showing the Muslims praying. And I'm thinking, well, couldn't they do that at some other point in the program instead of just breaking it in there? Again, I think, you know, it's building a Pavlovian response.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist, so I'm looking for these kind of things.
But
other people aren't going to see that, maybe. And it's going subliminally.
But also the way they set up the people in that household. So we had Mr. Fanatic in there as well, that kind of thing. But also it did show a much softer side of Islam as well, and the different personality mixes in there.
Yeah, they really picked a broad range of people.
Worth watching. We should put that down as the results as well.
I will. What was the title of the show again? I can't remember.
I'll have to look it up. But it was
Channel 4, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll find it.
But it was good.
Yeah.
So just talking about charity again and bringing it back to the notes. So I've got a quote here. The Quran says, "Do not render vain your charity by reminders of your generosity or by injury, like him who spends his wealth to be seen of men," i.e. don't talk about your charity afterwards.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's another hadith which says, "Charity should be given so that the left hand does not know what the right hand is doing," i.e. just keep it quiet and just give quietly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Try to tell a few journalists as well.
I can tell you about the 2.5% thing, because that's okay, but the actual amount, I'm not going to disclose and everything.
But I said before we came out, kind of some jokingly, but you say you have to give 2.5%. This is God you're answering to. It's not like you're getting checked upon by one of your pals or something like that.
The bank aren't going to deduct it or anything.
It doesn't come out of your pay packet or anything like that.
Yeah.
No, so I don't count income tax as being part of that charity, so that's given separately as well. Mm. So we talked about the 10% that Christians give as well sometimes, or recommending that.
Well, the biblical model was that you give 10% of, I think it's net. I think it was 10% of net. And I don't know how many people would actually adhere to that, that would proclaim Christianity, whether they would actually be.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, most of the schools and most of the hospitals that were in Europe particularly were all based around monasteries and nunneries. Like the hospitaller was the person that welcomed the pilgrims, and the hospital developed out of the hospitaller needing to tend to the wounds and the needing to create remedies for the pilgrims that were going to different places, which turned into the hospital.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was a strong, very strong charitable side of Christianity at one point. Whether we'd still see it as there, I don't know.
Do you have, like, when you attend mosque, is there a collection plate like there is at church at the end of the church service?
There is a collection plate, but that's more to run the mosque.
Right.
Rather than
just the upkeep.
There's usually another one there for charitable donations, but the one that goes round is the one for the upkeep of the mosque and the pay for the imam.
Have you got any mosque jobs? Do you have, like, rota for jobs? Because I, at our church, I'm on the rota for the sound desk, like the guy at the back who does all the audio stuff. Once a month I have to do that. That's my...
I used to teach kickboxing at the mosque. I used to do that, but I don't do that anymore. I got quite busy and I dropped off it. So,
there's always jobs to do, aren't there?
You made me feel guilty now, Ed. Guilt isn't a pillar of Islam. So, talking about charity, so there's the zakat, which is the compulsory part, then there's sadaqah, which is what we call the voluntary giving, and that can be, as we alluded to before, monetary, or there's other forms of charity as well. So there's a hadith which says, "To smile in the company of your brother is charity, to command good deeds and to prevent others from doing evil is charity, to guide a person in a place where you cannot get astray is charity, to remove something troublesome in someone's way, like on the road, is charity, and to pour water from your jug into the jug of your brother is charity, to guide a person with defective vision is charity for you as well."
Yeah, which comes back to if we will look after each other.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. Yeah. I'm liking what I hear. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so
we're going on to the dietary, fasting side.
Onto fasting, so. I think there's a lot of overlap between charity and fasting, because it makes you think about the poor. But with fasting, you actually do get that physical appreciation of the plight of the poor. And as I said before, the majority of the world's population aren't getting three meals a day, so they're feeling that hunger at some point, and for them it's not voluntary. If you are getting three meals a day, you've got a lot to be grateful for, I think, because being hungry kind of affects you pretty quickly.
Something that comes on quick, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, and just quickly as well, fasting in terms of the kind of diet industry is quite a trendy thing at the moment, isn't it? I saw a documentary on the BBC year before, I think it's on YouTube actually. You'll recognise the guy that presented it, but he did quite a lot of scientific research into the benefits
of
it.
The doctor.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name.
It's fascinating, really. And there's an app that I'm going to mention later on, which I've just seen launched, that helps you kind of get into that work as well. But yeah, go on, let's hear about your experiences.
Muslims fast during the month of Ramadan, so that's based on the Muslim calendar, and it's a lunar calendar. So for us, the requirement is no eating and drinking between sunrise and sunset. So at the moment, because it's a lunar calendar, Ramadan moves throughout the year.
Yeah.
So I remember many years ago, it was in the winter. Great. Mm-hmm. At the moment now, it's just gone through the longest day. And I think this year, the longest day will probably be in Ramadan as well. So the fasts are pretty long in Ellesmere Port. I mean, like, people are fasting in places like Iceland as well, where it's even longer. But in Ellesmere Port, where we are, we're looking at about 3:15 in the morning to 9:45 at night for the longest fasts. So day in, day out for about 29 or 30 days fasting. And you've got to be very careful about fluids and things. So the urge is to eat a lot of food, but it's far more important to take on liquids when you're fasting.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, when I do fast, like I said, a couple of times a year, but I have a lot of fluid in my, so even on the days when I'm eating nothing solid, I'm having honey, water and lemon. It might even be warm if it's cold, right. You know. The idea that you go for those periods between sunup and sundown where you don't take on any fluids at all, I find that really tough.
Yeah, you know, your wee goes a really dark colour. And your body kind of gets used to it.
Yeah.
But initially it's
the
quite...
first few tough. Days really tricky and it eases off.
Last year, I remember the first day was really tough for me in terms of food, and then it took a couple of days for that thirst thing to die down a bit. It was pretty tough.
And is this something that all your family, your kids follow as well? Or?
So the older kids do that. The youngest one hasn't really got into it full-time yet. But the summer's very hard for her, so she's, you know, at school as well, the kids, so it's quite interesting.
I mean, if working as well, but if you're at school, I guess, too, it's, super tricky, especially if all your pals are off in the canteen having their sausage and chips or whatever. So, yeah, just stay outside. You don't want to smell like sausage and chips, do you? This is a bit off topic a little bit, but, I mean, your kids are all... going to school, mixed race, and with all different types of folks?
So my eldest daughter's left school now, so she's working this year, and my son's doing first year A-levels at Whitby High.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, no, with the fasting, especially if you're kind of not surrounded by people doing exactly the same thing all day, I guess it makes it even trickier. Well, you at work as well, I guess.
My son's so resilient, it's unbelievable. He's 10 times better than me. And
really?
Yeah, I don't know if he even knows it's Ramadan with him.
Just gets on with it.
He's just that kind of kid, yeah.
Were you like that when you were young? Can you remember?
No, I wasn't fasting when I was younger.
Okay.
So I do remember keeping the couple, and we felt like heroes when we just did the one.
Wow. So you kind of ease yourself into it, but does it get then tricky towards the end? Or you kind of
For me, I think it's different for different people. Some people say that, you know, no problem at all, but for me, I kind of struggle, and I know I'm doing it, and I've got into the habit now of taking the whole month off work. So it's the first time ever that I've been at home, and my wife's been going into work because she's working at school.
A few people have
commented on that I'm staying at home and she's going to work now.
Because it's affecting your concentration or your energy levels? Is that why you're staying off?
That's my excuse. I just find it easier, really. You know, just have something to eat, go back to bed, get up at 9, makes the day a bit shorter. But a couple of years ago, when I was working at British Gypsum, my colleagues actually fasted with me in the office.
Oh, wow.
They did the one, so I'd recommend it in the summer if you want to feel the plight of the poor, or even now in the winter, just give it a go, sunrise to sunset.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, like I say, it's quite a trendy topic, really, in the kind of the whole world of, the coaching and the dietary aspect. We've got the 5-2 diet you mentioned before we were on air, didn't you, Sean?
Yeah. So that twice a week you reduce your calories right down.
Yeah.
So for a man it's 600, for a woman it's 500 calories.
The strangest thing about the 5-2 thing, because even outside of Ramadan, the Prophet used to fast 2 days.
Tuesday and Thursday.
Every week.
Yeah.
And then the recommendation from the Prophet was for people to fast 3 days in the month.
Yeah.
And so now I'm trying to build myself up to Ramadan, so I had a nice short fast on Sunday, and it went okay. It was quite a short day. Felt good from that.
Mm. And once you're out of it, do you feel a benefit, or is it physically, or is it more kind of the spiritual side of appreciating?
You definitely feel a physical benefit, yeah. I mean, I'm probably about 13 stone now, but that's about my average weight. And from when I was about 25, I used to be 11 stone. And I tell myself it's all muscle, but we know it's not. But yeah, after fasting, I lose about maybe 7 pounds. So you know, definitely physical benefits from that.
When I do my 13-day fast, it's usually 5-6 pounds.
That's good. And that's dry weight, not wet weight. So I'm not including the extra benefit you get from about 2 pounds of water there. So we talked about the benefits you do get from fasting. So I listed some from lifehacks.org. So fasting helps weight loss, improves insulin sensitivity, speeds up metabolism, promotes longevity, improves hunger, improves your eating patterns, improves your brain function, improves your immune system. So it contributes to self-enlightenment, help clears the skin and prevent acne. So I'm quite interested in diet and that because... Yeah. Both my parents had diabetes.
Right.
And being of a Pakistani Asian background, that gives me an additional 40% chance of getting diabetes, so type 2 diabetes. That total, I've got an 80% chance of getting diabetes.
Right.
Okay. So it's not good for me. Yeah. My blood sugar at the moment is about 5.6. I'm even checking beforehand. And I think it's above 6.0, then you're classed as type 2 diabetic. Mm-hmm. So I've only got 0.4 to go. And to combat that, I do try and exercise regularly. And I try to eat in moderation, and that's very difficult because my wife is an absolutely great cook in terms of Indian food, cakes and scones. Mm. She's really good at that. And then I've got a sweet tooth myself, so it's not easy. And then we talked about the weight thing, so that's my way. My weight continually goes up. But if you fast, it kind of helps you control your urges to eat sweet stuff or just to have a nibble as you're walking past.
But you were talking, was it your grandfather you were talking about that would walk 5 miles in the morning, 5 miles in the evening and knocked out one meal a day?
Yes, yeah, and he lived till 104 and he was a heavy smoker and he was healthy for most of his life. Yeah.
Yeah, and no diabetes at all.
No diabetes, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the model.
That sounds tough, giving up my evening meal.
Launched the new book. You could have made a killing.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. Better for a YouTube channel. Yeah. Was his 5 mile walk, was that just a health thing, or was that he was walking to work, to and from work? Or
no, it was a health thing. So
get some fresh air and
okay. Brilliant. And he only stopped when his eyesight gave way and he didn't feel safe anymore. So even then, he used to walk up and down the courtyard. Then after a while, you know, when he got that old, he said, "You know, I can't see anymore, so it's too difficult for me to walk now." So we talked about diets. I have tried low-fat vegan diet, and I've tried the GI diet, and I do lose weight on those diets, and I feel healthier when I'm doing them. And but it's my own discipline that lets me down. Whereas I find when I'm fasting, I do have a discipline to get through to sunrise to sunset.
See, I identify with that. When I'm on a fast, I'm on a fast. Mm. So it's almost like I adhere to a set of rules. Whereas if I'm just trying to kind of lose a bit of weight, I'm picking and eating, nibbling. And,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I go with that.
You're going on bread-making courses.
Yeah. And it gives you kind of a bit of a resistance as well, doesn't it? It helps you walk past the biscuit tin rather than attack the biscuit tin, even when you're not fasting.
Yeah. The spiritual side that comes from fasting as well. You know, that just gives you a closer connection to your faith.
It does, definitely. They say that all the devils are locked up during the month of Ramzan. And you definitely feel that. You feel, although you'd think you'd be a lot more grumpier and be snapping at everyone, kind of, it slows you down during Ramzan. And you do feel like you've got more time for the world. And there's that disconnect. Because maybe, you know, it takes you back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And it shows you what's really, really important to you is having that food and being thankful for that food at the end of the day. Well, I was having a discussion about restaurants. About someone, and they were talking about this Michelin-style restaurant or this and that. And I said, you know what, the best food I've ever had is when I have fried eggs and toast after a long fast.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the best food I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, I agree with that.
you have to be careful when you're coming back up? Like what you eat, you can't just gorge on any old thing.
You're supposed to be careful, but because
when I do my fast, I do several days on just fluids, like 24 hours a day for like 3-4 days maybe. I came off of that onto egg and chips once, and I was really ill. So you have to be a bit
careful.
Yeah, because you're
Asian tradition is to just to go for it. So I was just going to say this. So I was discussing the virtues of a meat-free diet with a friend at work, but he suggested I stop radicalising him.
I get it.
Thought I'd chuck that one.
Pretty good, that. Yeah, I like it.
I've got a couple of quotes for you as well. So then there's a hadith on eating. So it says, no human ever filled a vessel worse than the stomach. Not meaning the stomach's bad, but we overfill it all the time.
Yeah.
And it says, it's sufficient for any son of Adam other morsels to keep his back straight, i.e. we should, you know, eat to live, not live to eat.
Yeah.
And there's another hadith that says, overeating does not go with good health.
Yeah.
And then a common one that we all speak about is the one-third rule, it's called. So when you go for a meal, one-third should be for water, and it's recommended you have the water first, then one-third for food, and then leave your stomach one-third empty.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So early Muslims had a calorie-limited diet, probably not by choice, but it was a semi-vegetarian diet as well, although apart from pork, there's no prohibitions on meat. You can, you know, eat meat.
Mm. Cool. All right, yeah, and I'm playing with all the kind of meat-free stuff. In fact, I think this week we're going to be meat-free completely as a family. I've tried those Linda McCartney veggie burgers. They're absolutely stunning. So getting the kids off their kind of usual sausages and what have you, and just substituting here and there, and finding that getting by fine at the moment, actually. Mine's more of environmental reasons that I'm doing it, but
there's many reasons, isn't there, for going meat-free. I do think it's much healthier. Your guts just feel so much more healthier when you go meat-free.
I don't eat meat. I eat a little bit of fish. But because I'd been vegetarian for a long time, when I came back to Britain and I hadn't eaten meat, I found myself eating bacon sandwiches, of all things. And I hadn't eaten meat for years. And I thought, this is crazy. And I had the opportunity to have a farm. So I had a farm and I raised animals.
Right.
And killed the animals and ate the animals and did the whole thing until I decided to be a vegetarian again. and for me, an animal, when you grow an animal, it's like a friend. And I think we have a disconnect from, it's too easy to go down to Tesco's and get meat in a box. Whereas if you said to people, this calf is for dinner, chaps, who's going to bang it on the head? People would say, oh, you're really cruel, you shouldn't do that. But that's the reality of eating meat.
Yeah.
And it's okay unless you're the cow.
Maybe this is a link to that halal thing as well. So people have heard about that on the news as well, about slaughterhouses and things like that. But that's actually what we're doing. When we halal an animal, we're asking permission from God to take the life of that animal, you know, to feed ourselves. So yeah, just to explain that, where that comes from as well.
Okay,
cool.
Okay, and then just on the last one, the last pillar of Islam is Hajj. But I've only been on the Umrah at the moment, which is
the pilgrimage.
To Mecca. So the Umrah is the lesser pilgrimage, which can be done at any time of the year, and the Hajj has to be done at a particular time, and it involves more rituals. And that's when about 2-3 million Muslims do go to Mecca for the Hajj.
It's amazing when you see that amount of people. It's like a sea of people.
And you see those shots, aerial views of all those people walking around the Kaaba.
Incredible. Yeah. What was your experience on your
the mini one?
Even when we went on the mini one, we went in the April holidays, and there were so many people there. My kids found it a bit daunting, and we were a bit unprepared. But spiritually, it was very uplifting to walk around the Kaaba, and actually, you know, you never get to pray in front of the Kaaba when you're at home, but there was a couple of times when we actually made it to the forecourt, and they led us on to the forecourt because it was just so crowded we couldn't get on a lot of the time, and to have that in front of you, it was an amazing, uplifting experience.
So you're hoping to go for the full hit?
Yep.
in the coming years?
As we say, inshallah, yep. I hope to go for the full hit at least once in my life, yeah.
And will you go with the whole family or just with you, your wife? Or?
Myself and my wife. I think even then, you know, if we're waiting for all the kids to grow up and have the physical strength to do the Hajj, we might be waiting a long time, and then we might not have the physical strength.
Yeah. It's quite a journey.
So in Islam, the deal would be that everybody, if they could, should do the Hajj once in their lifetime.
That's it, exactly, yes.
Yeah.
And then if you can afford it, yeah.
Yeah.
And then when you do your Hajj, you are forgiven all your past sins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like it's worth it then.
Yeah. Definitely for me, yeah.
It's good. It's good.
Cool. Okay, then. So, in summary, then, have you got some more quotes you wanted to...
It was just the last one, which was advice from a wise man called Luqman to his son. And this is a quote from the Quran. And it's general advice on conduct for Muslims. And I think it's quite important to say, you know, how Muslims should be seen to be acting, not what people see on the news. So I think this is why I chose these particular quotes.
Yeah.
And so Luqman says to his son, "O my son, establish regular prayer, enjoin what is just and forbid what is wrong, and bear with patient constancy whatever betide thee, for this is firmness in affairs. And swell not thy cheek in pride at men, nor walk in insolence through the earth, for God loveth not the arrogant boaster. And be moderate in thy pace, and lower thy voice, for the harshest of sounds, without doubt, is the braying of the ass."
Mm.
Yeah, that kind of sums up my presentation.
Started
with that.
Well, one of the strands that comes out quite strongly to me in listening to you talk is that level of, I suppose I'd use the word humility, that you shouldn't be boastful, that you should be a good person, but you should be humble in your goodness.
Yes. I think that's given quite a few times in the scriptures and even in the short introduction I've given you today.
Yeah.
And that's what we were taught, you know, in growing up. So, you know, don't chase fame, fortune and glory and think about the hereafter. And this is what God wants from you, for you to achieve the hereafter. Because it's not guaranteed that Muslims are going to heaven. We don't have that belief, or certainly we don't.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Brilliant. No, I'm loving it. I mean, yeah, it's probably worth mentioning just again. And so, in terms of the kind of the more negative side of Islam that we you might see every now and again on a Daily Express front page, or if you happen to a Britain First video pops up on your Facebook feed because someone's inadvertently liked it. what goes through your head when you see all that stuff? And
Again, it saddens me. And these days, you feel like you've been attacked from every side. So again, when you see something like a bombing going on, first thing you think is, I hope Muslims are not involved. About the videos, and I used to see the videos on YouTube, and I used to try and address some of the points they made, and I used to type in answers and try and educate people. But then after a while, YouTube kind of looks at what you type in, responding to and looking at, and gives you more and more videos, and it was just dragging me down. So I eventually stopped looking at YouTube videos on the subject of Islamophobia, because I was just getting it. You felt like you're getting it from every side, and it was just getting a bit too much.
Mm.
It seems to have calmed down a bit recently. Touch wood, But
I mean, it's like what you surround yourself with, isn't it? Because I started to see those same videos and similar ones on my feed, but my YouTube homepage when I was starting to research these things and delve into the comments, which I can, no one should look at the comments on YouTube videos except for yours, of course, because they're just like a cesspool, just like the worst people in the world seem to comment, and just so much like hate speech going on there. It's crazy. In reality, when you go out in the world, I don't know, maybe you've got instances where you have been, you've not felt comfortable in a certain place, or but I don't know, most people I've met and come across are all pretty sound and cool, and just want to get on with the neighbours. And
yeah, I think most people are like that. Ellesmere Port's a bit different in that there's not many Asians or Muslims in Ellesmere Port. It's quite different to where I've been used to being living. And we've had a few incidents there, but on the whole, most people have been very nice. I'm not talking about anything to do with Islam, but maybe, you know, more to do with race and stuff. But on the whole, most of the people that we meet are, you know, very nice. But I think people are more friendly up in the northwest than they are down south.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And I come from down south, so
as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we do love our southern listeners as well.
but it's like when I go down the street here, there's a lot of curtain twitchers that all know what's going on because everyone's interested in everybody else.
Okay.
Whereas when you go down the street in London, you know, you could probably die and it would be several days before people realised you were dead.
Yeah.
You know, whereas here they'd be banging on the door going, you're right in there.
Yeah, community.
It's a different world, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Should we go on to our resource of the week that we've each got? Because we've mentioned a few things that I'll link to already. But
yeah.
Ramon, do you want to go first?
So I kind of got to, I don't think we mentioned the message video, so I've suggested.
Yeah.
And Sean's ordered it.
I've ordered the coffee.
Yeah, so if cool. people want an introduction into early Islam, because you don't really get to see stories like you do about Jesus on TV. So this is the story of how early Islam formed. Produced in 1977, as we saw, and the version is in English with actors like Anthony Quinn, who are playing one of the key roles in that film. Yeah. So that's quite a good introduction into early Islam. And the second resource I've got is an MP3 of a surah from the Quran. It's called Surah Mulk, and that's just there for you to listen to and maybe try some meditation as you're listening to that surah of the Quran.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll stick it on the website.
Yeah.
What you got, Sean?
I'm going for Dummies. I like the Dummies series because they usually get very good people to write them and things are very clear.
Like Windows 10 for Dummies. But
yeah.
This is...
Yeah, but there's an Islam, there's a Quran for Dummies as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which, to me, are good in the way that they lay things out.
Cool.
Yeah.
Our listeners love to learn, don't they? So
yeah,
we'll stick the link in for that. And mine is an app called Zero, which has recently been launched. And I haven't played with it too much yet, but it's by a Silicon Valley dude who's been getting more and more into the world of fasting. He's developed an app which helps you on the path to fasting, and it seems quite interesting, so I'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, it's good.
Worth a look, I would reckon. And yeah, like I say, there are many more resources that we'll link to, including Roman's website and YouTube channel, which aren't really related to Islam much
at all. But if you're interested in Six Sigma and Minitab, yeah, you can give it a go.
We'll link to it as well. Yeah, interesting stuff. Anything else you want to mention, Sean?
No, I'm good. I'd like to thank you for coming on. It's been a real pleasure.
Been great having you in. Thanks for coming along.
Thank you very much.
And yeah, if there's anything else in the future, drop us a line and get you back maybe.
Yeah,
at some point in the future.
Cool. Yeah.
If you fancy it. Anyone out there listening that would like us to discuss any particular topic, drop us a line via the website. Are we short on ideas at the moment, Sean?
We're never short on ideas.
Never short of stuff to talk about, are we, really?
Yeah. There are a couple of people that we need to contact.
There are, indeed. We've got a couple more guest
shows
coming up in the coming weeks.
Yep.
Hopefully with a bit of a... We need to check diaries, don't we?
Yep.
So watch out for that. LiveInThePresent.co.uk is our website. Check it out for all the show notes and links. 123 Friday are our partners. Click the button on the webpage and check that out as well. We're on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, aren't we, Sean?
We are indeed.
You even used your own personal Instagram account, I think, or Twitter account to put pictures of your bread.
I think that it certainly happened.
You haven't tweeted for months and
it
months.
It certainly happened. I think Reem might have pressed the button.
Ah, I see. You got a bit of help.
The delete button.
Yeah, but Live in the Present are online. We're always putting updates on multiple times per week, so check us out if you can. Roman, one final thanks. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you, I enjoyed it. And good. Just want to wish everyone well for the new 2017.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good year,
A very good year.
All right, take care, everyone. See you later.
Okay, bye now.
Bye.
Bye.